Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
As part of a preview of her upcoming State of the State message next week, Governor Kathy Hochul has announced plans to invest significantly in child care across New York. Joining New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani, the Democrat announced plans to fund child care for two-year-olds in the city. And across the rest of the state, Hochul wants to strengthen universal pre-K for communities that have struggled to provide services.
We're going to invest $470 million to support the administration of universal pre-K across all of our towns and our cities and deliver on the guarantee I'm making today that universal pre-K will be available for every single four-year-old across New York by 2028, 2 years from now.
Hochul says she also wants to create a network of community-based daycare centers for newborns to three-year-olds and increase funding for the state's child care voucher program by 40%. Hochul will deliver her full State of the State address on Tuesday, January 13th. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A U.S. District Court judge is blocking a Trump-picked federal prosecutor from investigating New York State Attorney General Letitia James. The New York Public News Network's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
Judge Lorna Schofield says John Sarcone isn't lawfully serving as the acting U.S. attorney in Albany because his interim 120-day term has expired. As a result, Schofield ordered subpoenas that Sarcone had directed to James's office be quashed. Sarcone was seeking records about James's previous fraud investigation into President Trump, which resulted in fines of more than $350 million. James stood by that case and said Schofield's order is, quote, an important win for the rule of law. Sarcone didn't return messages seeking comment. Federal judges in other parts of the country have thrown out cases against Trump's perceived enemies for similar reasons. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With the 2026 session now officially underway, I sat down with New York State Assembly Republican Minority Leader Will Barclay to talk about the conference's priorities for the 2026 session.
Probably our biggest priority is no surprise to anybody because you hear any elected official talking about it, and rightfully so, is affordability, affordability, and affordability. Unfortunately, in New York, certainly during Governor Hochul's tenure, we've seen costs rise across the board, whether it's housing costs, gasoline, groceries, utilities, medical care, you name it, costs have skyrocketed. And I think you see that, you know, the voters are uptight about it, rightfully so, and as a result, they're voting a lot of their incumbents out of office. And so we're not naive to that situation, so we want to do something about affordability in New York State. And some are easy. They're not, you know, no easy silver bullet, but there are some things that can provide relief to the taxpayers. One, I've always said, David, is not when you're in a hole, don't keep digging. So we have a tax and spend mentality in New York. Spending has increased this last year over 7%. I think our budget now is something like $200 billion, a quarter trillion dollars. It's like $258 billion. So we got to get a handle on government spending, because if you spend a lot, you have to tax a lot, and that hasn't been beneficial for New Yorkers. But we can do other things, like, you know, I like the proposal that President Trump enacted with no taxes on tip or overtime. That seems like that's a good policy that I was pleased that the governor has now agreed to. So I think that would be a priority. We can also take away sales tax on some household items that will provide relief. And again, David, I understand these aren't, you know, the, as I said, the silver bullet, but every little bit helps. And we need to start changing the mentality that we've had in New York for too long, that we government can continue to just go to the taxpayers for an unlimited check at some point. That's got to end. So maybe because we're facing some fiscal constraints in the state, maybe this is a year that we can get it done.
You know, I point out, Will Barclay, Assembly Minority Leader, Republican, that obviously being in the minority means a lot of times you don't have the power, you don't have the votes to get your perspective, your policies, your proposals into law. But I've also seen from the Democratic side, or in the past, way past when the Republicans were in majority, they'd often steal the other side's ideas and make them their own. So, you know, no tax on tips is kind of one. And then, although that's been roaming around the legislature, but, you know, how many of these new ideas you're coming up with will the Democrats grab?
Well, we don't mind. I mean, obviously, we don't need the credit. We do have the bully pulpit, but we're more concerned about good public policy than getting the credit for it. So I allow any of my Democratic colleagues to take any of my bills if they want to run with them and get them passed. That's fine. Fine with me, David. The one thing I will tell your listeners, if they're interested in our agenda, so we've really worked, you know, the legislature is only in session January through June. But that doesn't mean we're, you know, on vacation for those other 6 months. And we've been working very hard to come up with a real strong policy agenda to set forth what the Republican Conference and the Assembly stands for and the direction we'd like to see the state, so we can contrast it at what's actually being done a lot of times with the Democrats. But if anybody's interested, it's nygoppolicy.com. And it really lists all our priorities on there. And it's what I said, affordability is certainly top of that list, but we have other priorities, like, you know, we've talked on this show quite a bit about crime, issues that we've passed, policies that we've passed here that we think make New York less safe. We'd like to see some reform on that. Energy, we have some policy things on energy. We have some stuff on healthcare. We have a whole, basically, the big issues out there. We have some policy proposals that we think will make New York State better.
Can we talk healthcare for just a minute and the idea of affordability? Because those two things, with all these issues, there's the issue of affordability sort of wrapped within it. But thousands of New Yorkers now starting the new year with higher healthcare costs. The change affects Americans who don't get their health insurance from an employer and don't qualify for Medicaid or Medicare. They are facing these higher health costs this year with the expiration of the federal subsidies to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. I've seen the arguments on both sides of this. In the end, it's costing New Yorkers and other citizens more when you've got the federal government now freezing funds for child care. And a lot of Democratic lawmakers are not happy about this. He froze child care funding for blue states, basically, states he was upset with. So those costs go up. And you had the governor working with the new mayor of New York City, Zohran Mamdani, for free child care. That kind of throws this into some trouble. So, you know, aren't the federal government's policies hindering affordability in New York?
Well, I think they would say, and I agree with a lot. Now, of course, I'm very New York centric, so I get very concerned anything the federal government does is going to have an adverse effect on New York. But I do also, on the flip side, understand that there can't be an unlimited check on it. I mean, it's all cost money. The money's got to come from somewhere. And how much more can we go constantly to the taxpayers? I think because of some of this, you know, we talked, I think last time I talked to you about the Medicaid program and the increases of expense and trying to put some, in my mind, some common sense reform in there and how much pushback even that's gotten, you know, when we talked about, I think before, about having it, you know, if you're of working age and able body and you don't have kids, should you be on Medicaid? I think that's a reasonable policy question. And, you know, so can we do anything to reform these programs without it getting labeled as a cut? and, you know, some sort of, you know, catastrophic event's going to happen if these programs get, you know, reformed. So that's, I think that's the difficulty they have in, you know, the federal government, because they're trying to get their arms around it. And at some point, though, you know, there is limits to anything. Government can't provide everybody everything, because again, it has to be paid for. And the more you tax, the more oppressive government is, and the less likely that there's expansion, economic expansion, you know, creativity and entrepreneurialism. So I think that's the balance they're trying to strike. Interestingly, you know, the subsidies you referred to, the Democrats are the ones that put the sunset in those,
right.
And they were only supposed to be during the COVID years. You know, it was a temporary subsidy during the difficult COVID years. It wasn't supposed to last forever, but now apparently Democrats have changed their thought on that and think it ought to be last forever. You know, I recall when Obamacare was supposed to solve everybody's health care problems, but that didn't seem to be the case, or doesn't seem to be the case.
That's New York State Assembly Republican Minority Leader Will Barclay. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Advocates for healthcare providers serving New Yorkers with mental health and substance abuse conditions are ramping up their campaign to change how they get paid by Medicaid. After more than a decade of collecting state payments through health insurance companies, New York State Council for Community Behavioral Healthcare Executive Director Lori Cole tells Public Radio's David Lombardo on the Capitol Press Room that providers want to return to a fee-for-service model.
Presumably, the state got into these contracts with what are 15 different insurers around the state that allegedly manage care for these New Yorkers with mental health and substance abuse conditions, vulnerable New Yorkers, and the idea was to open up access to care to ensure that all New Yorkers could access the public mental hygiene system on demand and in a timely manner. In order to do that, insurers made contracts with providers or community-based organizations who are then in their networks, and presumably the insurer, when they get a call from a client or a New Yorker who wants to use their mental health benefits, will be able to make the arrangement for their care. What has happened is the opposite. There has been no value add for New York. It's very costly to use this model of care. New York spends approximately $400 million a year paying insurers, again, mostly for-profit insurers, $400 million a year collectively to manage the program. However, there are waiting lists, excessive waiting lists, around the state for that care. Providers are absolutely fragile to begin with financially, and they wait for payment from the insurer months and sometimes years. Mm. And most importantly, New Yorkers who appeal to the insurance company for either a particular service or the name of a provider are faced with ghost networks in insurer directories that are not accurate. And in our estimation, at this point, after 10 years, we can firmly say that the basis of the model, which is insurers managing care, is an incentive for them to delay or deny care and to delay or deny payment to the provider.
So why remove the behavioral health services out of the managed care model as opposed to reform the managed care model? Why not take a more active approach to, say, regulating those ghost networks, as we've seen, say, the state attorney general's office try to do in other areas? And you're giving me a look. So you why throw the baby out with the bathwater? Because there were concerns with the fee-for-service model that prompted the changes in the first place.
Well, first, before we were carved, our services were carved into Medicaid managed care, they were fee-for-service reimbursed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple process.
But people weren't happy with it in terms of the state feeling like that there was waste, for example, and that things could be done
right
more efficiently. So it wasn't like it was a panacea at the time.
I don't know that the state would fully, you know, everyone would agree, decision makers would all agree
okay
that that was the case. Fee-for-service is a more direct, streamlined, efficient way to pay providers for care that has already been delivered.
Are there checks on that system, though, to ensure that there isn't waste?
There are checks on that system.
And what would you point to?
That is a myth that there isn't.
New York State Council for Community Behavioral Healthcare Executive Director Lori Cole speaking with Public Radio's David Lombardo on the Capitol Press Room. The city of Saratoga Springs has signed an agreement with the New York State Attorney General's office to resolve complaints that city police and officials retaliated against Black Lives Matter protesters. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine with details.
In 2024, the New York Attorney General's office released a report faulting city police and former city officials, including former Mayor Robin Dalton and former police chief Shane Crooks, for targeting Black Lives Matter protesters and violating their First Amendment rights. According to the Attorney General's investigation, the city failed to correct officer misconduct related to retaliation against BLM protesters and even referred Child Protective Services to the family of one BLM leader without cause. Now, after years of investigations and negotiations, Saratoga Springs City Council has signed an assurance of discontinuance with the AG's office. The agreement, which received unanimous support, prevents city police or officials from engaging or attempting to engage in activities that would violate the First Amendment rights of demonstrators. Ahead of the signing at Tuesday's city council meeting, resident Andrew Beatty expressed his frustration with the agreement.
I'm disappointed because I searched for the words I should see. Disciplined, fired, arrested. And instead I see a recommendation to write a new policy that should instruct officers to not commit false arrests for revenge upon political rivals, or by instruction from their bosses, you.
The agreement outlines a number of policies the city will adopt to uphold First Amendment-protected activities, including a four-tiered protest response system, as well as a requirement to train at least one protest liaison. The AG's office will also appoint an oversight officer to review arrests made during demonstrations. Public Safety Commissioner Tim Cole, a Democrat who has Republican backing, emphasized that in signing the agreement, the city doesn't necessarily accept the Attorney General's factual findings.
Over the past 18 months, the city has had extensive and at times spirited discussions with the OAG on this matter. Ultimately, we were able to find common ground, and that understanding is reflected in this agreement. I appreciate the collaboration of the OAG throughout the process, and I believe that executing this AOD, is in the best interest of the city of Saratoga Springs. It's also important to note that the AOD clearly states that the city does not admit to the factual findings presented by the OAG.
Following the meeting, Republican Mayor John Safford celebrated the agreement.
What started out as an adversarial relationship has turned out to be positive. I think everyone has learned from this. I think our police department is way better. Not way better. I think they've always been great, but have learned some things. I just think this is all really, really good, positive stuff for the city.
Notably, the agreement upholds the city's use of declaration demonstrations, essentially protest permits that residents must apply for prior to taking to the streets. Cole says the city is working to remove the jail time associated with failing to acquire a declaration. Still, Saratoga BLM co-founder Lexis Figueroa has no plans to apply for any demonstration declarations.
The amendments were set up, by the people who founded this country. And it never included asking for permission from the police or asking permission from city officials who you're protesting against if you have the right to protest. It's a safety issue as well. They say that it's actually safer for us to allow the police to know what we're doing. According to this whole investigation, it's actually the exact opposite.
Figueroa adds he believes the agreement doesn't go far enough in holding the city accountable. In a statement, New York Attorney General Letitia James said the agreement is a, quote, significant step toward rebuilding trust between the Saratoga Springs community and its police force and will ensure everyone is able to safely express their beliefs, end quote. The city has 3 months to comply, and the agreement will remain in effect through 2029. Cole says it will cost the city roughly $200,000 a year to comply, due in part to the requirement to hire an internal affairs officer.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shello Levine. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Former Town of Plattsburgh Supervisor Michael Cashman won a special election in November to fill the term of former New York 115th District Assemblyman D. Billy Jones. Since he was elected, Cashman, a Democrat, has been setting up his regional offices, hiring staff, and preparing for the legislative session. In a conversation with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley this week, Cashman says his priority is to make sure North Country voices are heard in Albany.
It's about building relationships. It's about making sure that I'm taking the time and attention to focus on the committee work. I'm on agriculture, I'm on tourism, on veterans, and also chairing the New York Canadian Task Force.
You mentioned that you've been assigned to three committees, agriculture, tourism, parks, and sports development, and veterans affairs. Were those the committees you sought to serve on?
They were. There certainly are other committees that I would also like to serve on, and in time I hope to be able to secure a seat on some additional committees. So we'll see what happens.
What are those committees that you would eventually like to serve on?
Our district has so many needs. I mean, it's everything from health to aging to local government. I mean, I could go on and on.
House Speaker Carl Hasty appointed you chair of the Task Force on New York-Canada Relations. Obviously, having been town supervisor, you understand how important that is for the communities across New York State's border. How do you plan to relate that importance to assembly members who are not near the Canadian border?
Yeah, that's a great question, Pat. And the work has to be done from an advantage point where it's just not border communities that need to understand the importance of the New York-Canadian relationship. There's an economic influence, but there's a social influence. And I'm hoping that the membership of the task force will be reflective of New York State. So having some folks from New York City, some folks from Buffalo, et cetera, and that we continue to focus on the needs of, you know, our golf courses and our hotels and our small businesses, but also the social fabric that connects us as friends.
Michael Cashman, you have also been concerned about prison closures across the region, even when you were town supervisor, Plattsburgh town supervisor. How do you plan to address that in the assembly and get the governor's office even to realize the implications of prison closures in the North Country?
The way that I look at it is safety should be a lens that we're looking at things. Our correction officers need to have a safe work environment, as well as those folks that are employees of DOT. All state employees need to have safe work environments. So we need to start there. The other part to it is I hope to have some of my colleagues around the state come up to the North Country and to go to some of the facilities, as well as other areas throughout the district, and do a listen, learn, a listen and learn tour for those individuals that understand the complexities and the needs and hear it directly from folks.
The session is starting, and you already have two bills ready to go. What are they, and why are you so quickly submitting them?
Yeah, so it's rather unprecedented that an individual that's coming in from a special election has had the opportunity to get some bills moved forward. And the two bills that I introduced address North Country needs and North Country problems. The first bill addresses the electric rates and the infrastructure, providing consumer protections and what people are often referring to as the hidden fees. This bill proposes putting caps, providing new auditing mechanisms to hold the companies accountable, and recovery costs should we find the companies are not meeting the standard that protect the consumers. The second bill that's being referred to as RETA is an act for regional equity. The inspiration came from the electrification goals for New York State. There is a full recognition by everyone up here that the electrification goals for New York State are unrealistic. The grid cannot meet the goals. The goals of the electric buses are unrealistic, from the cost to the infrastructure to the small rural bridges that the buses would need to go on. So what this bill does is sets for bills to move forward and to take effect, the region's capacity needs to be accounted for. And an example is how New York State has approached the minimum wage. There's a minimum wage that is different downstate versus upstate. The North Country needs North Country solutions for North Country problems.
Michael Cashman, the session is starting like less than 2 months from when you were elected. So I'm curious, as you've been going down to Albany and set your office up, what's the most surprising thing you've learned about the state assembly?
I don't know if it's surprising, but things have been certainly reaffirmed. New York State is very bureaucratic. From my own onboarding as an assemblyman to the process by which, you know, we need to get bills filed, etc. I'm really proud to have filed my first two bills. I got in the committee assignments. There's a lot more work to be done, and I promise to be tireless in my approach.
115th District Democrat Michael Cashman served as Town of Plattsburgh supervisor for nearly 10 years before his election to the New York State Assembly.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2602. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.